This is Audible.
Recorded books and one-click digital present Isle of the Lost, a Descendants novel by Melissa de la Cruz, narrated by Sophia Carson.
Prologue. Once upon a time, during a time after all the happily ever afters, and perhaps even after the ever-afters after that, all the evil villains of the world were banished from the United Kingdom of Auradon and imprisoned on the Isle of the Lost. There, underneath a protective dome that kept all manner of enchantment out of their clutches, the terrible, the treacherous, the truly awful, and the severely sinister were cursed to live without the power of magic. King Beast declared the villains exiled forever. Forever, as it turns out, is quite a long time. Longer than an enchanted princess can sleep. Longer even than an imprisoned maiden's tower of golden hair. Longer than a week of being turned into a frog. And certainly much longer than waiting for a prince to finally get around to placing that glass slipper on your foot already. Yes, forever is a long, long, long time. It's been 10 years, to be specific. 10 years that these legendary villains have been trapped on a floating prison of rock and rubble. Okay, so you might say 10 years isn't such a long time, considering. But for these conjurers and witches, viziers and sorcerers, evil queens and dark fairies, to live without magic was a sentence worse than death. And some of them were brought back from death, only to be placed on this island. So, they should know. Without their awesome powers to dominate and hypnotize, terrorize and threaten, create thunderclouds and lightning storms, transform and disguise their features, or lie and manipulate their way into getting exactly what they wanted, they were reduced to hard-scrabble lives, ecking a living, selling and eating slop, scaring no one but their own minions, and stealing from each other. It was hard even for them to imagine they once had been great and powerful, these poisoners of forest apples and thieves of undersea voices, these usurpers of royal powers and owners of petulant mirrors. Now, their lives were anything but powerful. Now they were ordinary, every day. Dare it be said, dull. So, it was with great excitement and no small fanfare that the island gathered for a one-of-a-kind event, a 6-year-old princess's wickedly wonderful birthday party. Wicked being something of a relative term under a dome of powerless former villains. In any event, a party it was. It was the most magnificent celebration the isolated island and its banished citizens had ever seen, and tales of its gothic grandeur and obnoxious opulence would be told for years to come. The party to end all parties. This lavish occasion transformed the ramshackle bazaar and its rotting storefronts in the middle of the island into a spookily spectacular playground, full of ghostly lanterns and flickering candles. Weeks before, a flock of vultures had circled the land, dropping invitations on every shabby doorstep and hovel, so that every grubby little urchin from every corner of the island would be able to partake in this enchanting and extraordinary event. Every little urchin on the island, that is, except for one malicious little fairy. Whether her invitation was lost to the winds and torn to tatters, or devoured by the hungry buzzards themselves, or, gasp, never even addressed in that looping royal scrawl, as was suspected, we will never know. But the result was the same. Above the tumultuous bazaar, up high on her castle balcony, 6-year-old Mal pulled on the locks of her thick, purple hair and pursed her lips as she observed the dark and delicious festivities below. What she could make of them, at least. There she saw the tiny princess, the fairest of the island, sitting on her rickety throne, her hair as blue as the ocean, eyes as dark as night, and lips as red as blood. Her hair was pulled back from her face in a pretty V-braid, and she laughed in delight at the array of marvels before her. The princess possessed a darling giggle that was so entrancing, it brought a smile to haughty Lady Tremaine's face. She of the thwarted plans to marry her daughters to Prince Charming. The ferocious tiger, Shere Khan, was practically purring like a contented kitty. And for all time's sake, Captain Hook bravely stuck his head between TikTok's open jaws, if only so he could make her laugh and hear that lovely peal again. The princess, it would seem, could make even the most horrible villains smile. But Mal wasn't smiling. She could practically smell the 2-story cake made of sour apples, sinfully red and lusciously wormy. And try as she might, she couldn't help but overhear the screeches of the parrot Iago as he repeated, over and over again, the story of talking caves that held riches beyond measure, until the assembled villagers wanted to wring his feathered neck. Mal sighed with green-eyed jealousy as the children gleefully tore into their baddie bags. The crumpled containers contained a variety of evil sidekicks to choose from. Pet baby moray eels, akin to the slinky flotsam and jetsam swimming in tiny bowls. Little spotted cackling hyenas, who were no quieter than the infamous Shenzi, Bonsai, and Ed. Pouncing and adorable black kittens from Lucifer's latest litter, their badly behaved recipients screamed with excitement. As the party escalated in feverish merriment, Mal's heart grew as black as her mood, and she swore that one day she would show them all what it meant to be truly evil. She would grow up to be greedier than Mother Gothel, more selfish even than Cinderella's stepsisters, more cunning than Jafar, more deceptive than Ursula. She would show them all that she was just like her. Mother! She yelped, as the shadow of 2 looming and ominous horns made their way toward the balcony, and her mother appeared, her purple cape fluttering softly in the wind. Her mother's voice was rich, melodious, and tinged with menace. "What is going on here?" she demanded, as the children below tittered at the sight of a highly inappropriate shadow puppet show mounted by the frightening Dr. Facilier. "It's a birthday party," sniffed Mal. "And I wasn't invited." Is that right? Her mother asked. She peered at the celebration over Mal's shoulder, and they both took in the sight of the blue-haired princess giggling on a moth-eaten velvet pillow as Gaston's hairy and handsome young twin sons, Gaston Jr. and Gaston III, performed feats of strength, largely balancing their enormous booted feet on each other's squashed faces, to impress her. From the sound of things, it was working. "Celebrations are for the rabble," her mother scoffed. Mal knew her mother despised parties of any kind. She despised them almost as much as she did kings and queens who doted on their precious babies, chubby little fairies with a knack for dress design, and obnoxious princes on even more obnoxious valiant steeds. Nevertheless, Evil Queen and her horrid progeny will learn soon enough from their spiteful little mistake, her mother declared. For her mother was the great Maleficent, mistress of darkness, the most powerful and wicked fairy in the world, and the most fearsome villain in all the land. Or at least, she had been. Once upon a time, her mother's wrath had cursed a princess. Once upon a time, her mother's wrath had brought a prince to his knees. Once upon a time, her mother's wrath had put an entire kingdom to sleep. Once upon a time, her mother had had all the forces of hell at her command. And there was nothing Mal desired more in her heart than to grow up to be just like her. Maleficent stepped to the balcony's edge, where she could see out to the whole island, all the way to the sparkling lights of Auradon. She raised herself to her full height, as thunder and lightning cracked and boomed, and rain began to pour from the heavens. Since there was no magic on the island, this was just wickedly good coincidence. The party came to a halt, and the gathered citizens were paralyzed at the sight of their leader, glaring down at them with the full force of her wrath. "This celebration is over," Mal's mother declared. "Now shoo, flee, and scatter, like the little fleas you are. And you, Evil Queen and your daughter. From now on, you are dead to the entire island. You do not exist. You are nothing. Never show your faces anywhere ever again. Or else." Just as quickly as it had gathered, the group dispersed under the wary eye of Maleficent's frightening henchmen, the boar-like guards wearing aviator caps pulled down low over their hooded eyes. Mal caught a last glimpse of the blue-haired princess, looking fearfully up at the balcony before being whisked away by her equally terrified mother. Mal's eyes glittered with triumph, her dark heart glad that her misery had caused such wondrous maleficence. 10 terrible years later. Magic mirror on the wall. Who is the fairest of them all? Evil Queen, Snow White. Chapter 1. This is the story of a wicked fairy. It has to be a dream, Mal told herself. This couldn't be real. She was sitting by the edge of a beautiful lake, on the stone floor of an ancient temple ruin, eating the most luscious strawberry. The forest all around her was lush and green, and the sound of water rushing at her feet was soothing and peaceful. Even the very air all around her was sweet and fresh. "Where am I?" she asked aloud, reaching for a plump grape from the gorgeous picnic set before her. "Why, you've been in Auradon for days now. And this is the Enchanted Lake," answered the boy seated next to her. She hadn't noticed him until he spoke, but now that she had noticed, she wished she hadn't. The boy was the worst part of all this. Whatever this was. Tall, with tousled honey brown hair, and painfully handsome with the kind of smile that melted hearts and made all the girls swoon. But Mal wasn't like all the girls, and she was starting to feel panicked, like she was trapped here somehow, in Auradon, of all places, and that it might not be a dream. "Who are you?" she demanded. "Are you some kind of prince or something?" She looked askance at his fine blue shirt, embroidered with a small golden crest. "You know who I am," the boy said. "I'm your friend." Mal was instantly relieved. "Then this is a dream," she said with a crafty smile. "Because I have no friends." His face fell, but before he could answer, a voice boomed through the peaceful vista, darkening the skies and sending the water raging over the rocks. "Fools, idiots, morons," it thundered. Mal awoke with a start. Her mother was yelling at her subjects from the balcony again. Maleficent ran the Isle of the Lost the way she did everything, with fear and loathing, not to mention a healthy supply of minions. Mal was used to the shouting, but it made for a seriously rude awakening. Her heart was still pounding from her nightmare as she kicked off the purple satin covers. What on earth was she doing dreaming of Auradon? What kind of dark magic had sent a handsome prince to speak to her in her sleep? Mal shook her head and shuddered, trying to blink away the horrid vision of his dimpled smile, and was comforted by the familiar sound of fearful villagers begging Maleficent to take pity on them. She looked around her room, relieved to find she was right where she should be, in her huge, squeaky, wrought iron bed, with its gargoyles on each bedpost and velvet canopy that sagged so low it threatened to fall on top of her. It was always gloomy in Mal's room, just as it was always gray and overcast on the island. Her mother's voice boomed from the balcony, and the floor of her bedroom rattled, causing her violet lacquered chest of drawers to suddenly spring open, disgorging its purple contents on the floor. When Mal decided on a color scheme, she stuck to it, and she had been drawn to the layers of gothic richness in the purple continuum. It was the color of mystery and magic, moody and dark, while not being as commonplace in popular villains' wear as black. Purple was the new black, as far as Mal was concerned. She crossed the room past her grand, uneven armoire that prominently displayed all of her freshly shoplifted baubles, trinkets of cut glass and paste, shiny metallic scarves with trailing strands, mismatched gloves, and a variety of empty perfume bottles. Pushing the heavy curtains aside, from her window she could see the whole island in all its dreariness. Home, freak, home. The Isle of the Lost was not a very large island. Some would say It was but a speck or a blight on the landscape. Certainly more brown than green, with a collection of tin-roofed and haphazardly constructed shanties and tenements built on top of one another, and more or less threatening to collapse at any moment. Mal looked down at this eyesore of a slum from the tallest building in town, a formerly grand palace with soaring tower spires that was now the shabby, run-down, paint-ship location of the one and only Bargain Castle, where slightly used enchanter's robes were stocked in every color, and slightly lopsided witches' hats were always 50% off. It was also the home of some not-so-slightly bad fairies. Mal changed out of her pajamas, pulling on an artfully constructed purple biker jacket with a dash of pink on one arm and green on the other, and a pair of torn jeans the color of dried plums. She carefully put on her fingerless gloves and laced up her battered combat boots. She avoided glancing at the mirror, but if she had, she would have seen a small, pretty girl with an evil glint in her piercing green eyes and a pale, almost translucent complexion. People always remarked how much she looked like her mother, usually just before they ran screaming the other way. Mal relished their fear, even sought it. She combed her lilac locks with the back of her hand and picked up her sketchbook, stuffing it into her backpack along with the spray paint cans she always carried with her. This town wasn't going to graffiti itself, was it? In a perfectly magical world, it would. But that wasn't what she was dealing with. Since the kitchen cupboards were bare as usual, with nothing in the fridge but glass jars full of eyeballs and all sorts of moldy liquids of dubious provenance, all part of Maleficent's ongoing efforts to whip up potions and conjure spells like she used to, Mal headed to the slop shop across the street for her daily breakfast. She studied the choices on the menu. Black like your soul coffee, sour milk latte, crusty barley oatmeal with a choice of mealy apple or mushy banana, and stale mixed cereal, dry or wet. There were never many options. The food, or scraps, more like it, came from Auradon. Whatever wasn't good enough for those snobs got sent over to the island. Isle of the Lost? More like Isle of the Leftovers. Nobody minded too much, though. Cream and sugar, fresh bread and perfect pieces of fruit made people soft. Mal and the other banished villains preferred to be brittle and hard, inside and out. "What do you want?" a surly goblin asked, demanding her order. In the past, the disgusting things had been foot soldiers in her mother's dark army, ruthlessly dispatched across the land to find a hidden princess. But now their tasks were reduced to serving up coffee as bitter as their hearts, in tall, grande, and venti sizes. The only amusement they had left was to ruthlessly misspell each customer's name, written with marker on the side of each cup. The joke was on the goblin, since hardly anyone could read goblin. But that never seemed to make any difference. They kept blaming their imprisonment on the island on their allegiance to Maleficent, and it was common knowledge that they kept petitioning King Beast for amnesty, using their flimsy familial ties to the dwarves as proof they didn't belong here. "The usual, and make it snappy," said Mal, drumming her fingers on the counter. "Room for month-old milk? Do I look like I want curds? Give me the strongest, blackest coffee you've got. What is this? Auradon? It was like he'd seen her dreams, and the thought made her ill. The renty creature grunted, wiggling the boil on his nose, and pushed a dark, murky cup toward her. She grabbed it and ran out the door without paying. You little brat! I'll boil you in the coffee pot next time! The goblin shrieked. She cackled. Not if you can't catch me first. The goblins never learned. They had never found Princess Aurora either. But then again, the dimwits had been looking for a baby for 18 years. No wonder Maleficent was always frustrated. It was so hard to find good help these days. Mal continued on her way, stopping to smirk at the poster of King Beast, admonishing the citizens of the island to be good because it's good for you, with that silly yellow crown on his head and that big grin on his face. It was positively nauseating and more than a little haunting, at least to Mal. Maybe the Auradon propaganda was getting to her head. Maybe that's why she had dreamt she was frolicking in some sort of enchanted lake last night with some pretentious prince. Oh, the thought made her shudder again. She took a gulp of her scalding strong coffee. It tasted like mud. Perfect. In any event, she had to do something about this blister on the wall. Mal took out her paint cans and sprayed a mustache and goatee on the king's face and crossed out his ridiculous message. King Beast was the one who had locked them all up on the island after all. That hypocrite. She had a few messages of her own for him, and they all involved revenge. This was the Isle of the Lost. Evil lived, breathed, and ruled the island, and King Beast and his sickly sweet billboards cajoling the former villains of the world to do good had no place in it. Who wanted to make lemonade from lemons when you could make perfectly good lemon grenades? Next to the poster, she sprayed a thin black outline of a horned head and a spread cape. Above Maleficent's outline, she scrawled, "Evil lives," in bright green paint, the color of goblin slime. Not bad. Badder. That was much better. Chapter 2. A Wily Thief. If Mal lived above a shop, Jay, son of Jafar, actually lived inside one, sleeping on a worn carpet beneath a shelf, straining under ancient television sets with manual dials, radios that never worked, and telephones that had actual cords attached to them. His father had been the former Grand Vizier of Agrabah, feared and respected by all. But that was a long time ago, and the evil enchanter was now the proprietor of Jafar's junk shop. And Jay, his only son and heir, was also his sole supplier. If Jay's destiny had once been to become a great prince, only his father remembered it these days. You should be on top of an elephant leading a parade, waving to your subjects, Jafar mourned that morning as Jay prepared for school, pulling a red beanie over his long, straight dark hair and choosing his usual attire of purple and yellow leather vest and dark jeans. He flexed his considerable muscles as he pulled on his black studded gloves. Whatever you say, Dad, Jay winked with a mischievous smile. I'll try to steal an elephant if I come across any. Because Jay was a prince, all right. A prince of thieves, a con man, and a schemer, whose lies were as beautiful as his dark eyes. As he made his way through the narrow cobblestone streets, dodging rickshaws manned by Professor Radigan's daredevil crew, he took advantage of their frightened passengers, ducking under clotheslines weighed down by tattered robes and dripping capes, to filch a billfold or two. Ursula chased him away from her fish and chips shop, but not before he managed to grab a handful of greasy fries, and he took a moment to admire a collection of plastic jugs of every size and shape offered by another storefront, wondering if he could fit one in his pocket. Every manner of Auradon trash was recycled and repurposed on the island, from bathtubs to door handles, as well as from the villain's own formerly magical accoutrements. A shop advertised, "Use brooms that don't fly anymore but sweep okay," and crystal balls that were only good as goldfish bowls these days. As vendors laid out rotten fruit and spoiled vegetables under tattered tents, Jay swiped a bruised apple and took a bite, his pockets bulging with pilfered treasures. He waved a cheerful hello to a chorus of hooked-nosed witches gathered at a slanty balcony, Madame Mim's granddaughters, who, while relieved to be out of his sticky fingers' reach, swooned at his greeting nonetheless. Maleficent's henchmen, large boar-like men in leather rags with matching aviator-style caps pulled down over their eyes, snuffled an almost unintelligible hello as they passed him on their way to work. Jay deftly took their caps without their noticing and shoved them down the rear of his trousers, planning to sell them back to the guys the next day, like he did every week. But he resisted the urge to trip them up as well. There just wasn't time to do everything in one day. Looking for something to wash down the sour taste of the apple, Jay caught sight of a familiar face taking a sip from a paper cup bearing the slop shop logo and grinned. Perfect. "What in Lucifer's name?" Mal cried as the cup disappeared from her fingers. She hesitated for a second before realization hit. "Give it back, Jay," she said, hands on her hips, addressing the empty space on the sidewalk. He snickered. It was so much fun when Mal was mad. "Make me." "Jay," she snarled. "Make you what? Bruise, bleed, beg. Thieves' choice today." "Fine. Jeez," he said as he slunk out from the shadows. Pressed hot mud. My favorite." He handed her back her cup, feeling wistful. Mal took a sip and grimaced. "Ugh, actually, it's disgusting. You can have it. You look hungry." "Really?" He perked up. "Thanks, Mal. I was starving." "Don't think me it's particularly awful today. I think they threw some raw toads into the brew this morning," she said. "Bonus! Extra protein!" Amphibians or not, Jay drained it in one shot. He wiped his lips and smiled. "Thanks. You're a pal," he said in all honesty, even though he and Mal weren't friends, exactly. Although they were partners in crime. Like his, Mal's jeans and jacket pockets were stuffed with all manner of junk, shoplifted from every storefront in town. A knitting needle was sticking out of one pocket, while the other contained what looked like a sword handle. "Can I trade you a teapot for that old sword?" he asked hopefully. Everything his father sold was stuff Jay had stolen from somewhere else. "Sure," she said, taking a rusty kettle in exchange. "Look what else I got," she said. "Ursula's necklace." She rattled it in the air. I nabbed it this morning when the old sea witch waved hello.
Sweet, he nodded. All I got was a handful of fries.
Too bad it can't capture anything anymore, let alone a mermaid's voice. Mal huffed. It's still valuable. If you say so, he shrugged. Jay and Mal were in a constant competition for who was the more accomplished thief. A clear winner would be hard to call. You could say they had bonded on their love of swiping things, but they would tell you bonds of any kind were for the weak. Even so, they fell into step on the walk to school.
Heard the news?
He asked.
What news? There's no new news, she scoffed, meaning nothing new ever happened on the island.
The island's old-fashioned fuzzy-screen televisions only broadcast two channels. Oradon News Network, which was full of do-gooder propaganda, and the DSC, the Dungeon Shopping Channel, which specialized in hidden lair decor.
And slow down, or we'll get there on time, she added.
They turned off the main road toward the uneven, broken-down graveyard that was the front lawn of Dragon Hall. The venerable school for the advancement of evil education was located in a former mausoleum, a hulking gray structure with a domed ceiling and a broken-down colonnade, its pediment inscribed with the school's motto, "In Evil We Trust." Scattered around its haunted grounds were tombstones with horrible sayings carved into them, instead of the usual tombstones. As far as the leaders on this island were concerned, there was never a wrong time to remind its citizens that evil ruled.
No way. I heard news. Real news, he insisted as he caught up to her, his heavy combat boots stomping through the root-ripped graveyard terrain.
Check it out. There's a new girl in class.
Yeah, right. I'm totally serious, he said, narrowly avoiding stumbling over a tombstone inscribed with the phrase, "It is better to have never loved at all than to be loved."
New girl?
From where, exactly?
Mal asked, pointing to the magical dome that covered the island and shrouded the sky, obscuring the clouds.
Nothing and no one came in or out, so there wasn't ever a whole lot of new.
New to us. She's been castle-schooled until now, so it's her first time in the dungeon, said Jay, as they approached the wrought iron gates, and the crowd gathered around the entrance parted to let them through, many of their fellow students clutching their backpacks a little more tightly at the sight of the thieving duo.
Really? Mal stopped in her tracks.
What do you mean, castle schooled? She asked, her eyes narrowing suspiciously.
A real princess, too, is what I've heard. Like, your basic, true love's kiss, prick your finger, spin your gold, skip the haircut, marry the prince level princess. He felt dizzy just thinking about it.
Think I could lift a crown off her somewhere? Even a half crown? His father was always talking about the big score. The one fat treasure that would free them from the island somehow. Maybe the princess would lead them to it.
A princess? Mal said sternly. I don't believe you.
Jay wasn't listening anymore.
I mean, think of the loot she'd have on her. She's gotta have a ton of loot, right?
Hope she's easy on the eyes. Better yet, on the pockets. I could use an easy mark.
Mal's voice was suddenly acid. You're wrong. There weren't any princesses on the island, and certainly not any who would dare to show their faces around here.
Jace stared at her, and in the back of his mind he heard alarm bells and had a faint memory of an awesome birthday party concerning a princess and some sort of scandal that involved Mal and her mother. He felt bad, remembering now that Mal hadn't received an invitation. But he quickly suppressed the icky emotion, unsure of where it came from. Villains were supposed to revel in other people's sadness, not empathize. Besides, when it came down to it, Mal was like a sister, an annoying, ever-present pest and a pain in the bells, ringing and echoing through the island from the top of the tower, where Claudine Furlough was tugging the rope and being pulled up along with it as she rang in the official start of the Dragon Hall school day. Jay and Mal shared a smirk. They were officially tardy. The first thing that had gone right all morning. They passed through the crumbling and moss-covered archway and into the main tomb, which was buzzing with activity. Members of the Truant Council putting up signs for a week-old bake sale, the ear-splitting sounds of the junior orchestra practicing for the fall concert, the sea witches leaning over their violins. Frightened students scrambled to get out of their way as Mal and Jay walked past the dead, ivy-covered great hall toward the rusting double doors that led to the underground class tombs. A tiny first-year pirate who ran with Harriet Hook's crew got lost in the shuffle, blocking their path. Mal came to a halt. The boy slowly lifted his head, his eye patch trembling.
So sorry,
Mal, he said.
Move it,
Mal said, her voice high and mocking. She rolled her eyes and kicked the torn textbooks out of her way. The boy scampered toward the first open door he saw, dropping his fake hooked hand in his haste and sending it rolling away. Jay kept his silence, knowing to tread lightly as he picked up the hook and stuffed it inside his jacket. But he couldn't help asking, why not just throw a party of your own instead of sulking about it?
What are you talking about?
Said Mal, as if I care. Jay didn't reply. He was too busy hugging himself tightly and wishing he'd thought to bring a warmer jacket instead of a sleeveless vest as the temperature dropped the usual 20 degrees as they ventured down the cold marble stairs to the damp basement gloom of campus. Mal had gone silent for a moment, and Jay assumed she was still brooding on what happened 10 years ago when she suddenly snapped her fingers and said, with a wicked gleam in her eyes, "You're absolutely right, Jay. You're a genius."
"I am? I mean, yes, I am," replied Jay.
"Wait, what am I right about? Having a party of my own? There's a lot to celebrate after all. You just said there was a new princess in our midst. So I'm going to throw a party." Jay goggled at her.
"You are? I mean, I was just kidding. Everyone knows you hate
parties," Mal nodded. "But not this one. You'll see." "It's gonna be a real howler," she grinned. "Especially for the new kid." Jay smiled back weakly, wishing he had never mentioned it. When Mal got like this, it usually had terrible consequences. He shivered. There was a definite chill in the air. A new, wild wind was blowing, and he was smart enough to worry about where it would lead. Chapter 3. A beautiful princess. In the castle across the way lived a mother and daughter duo, very different from Maleficent and Mal. Unlike the shabby Victorian confines of the Bargain Castle, this one was full soot and dust, with broken chandeliers and spiderwebs in the corners. It wasn't so much a castle as a cave, yet another prison within the prison of the island. And for 10 years, this mother and daughter had only each other for company. Banishment to the far side of the island had made Evil Queen a little off balance, and Evie couldn't help but notice how her mother insisted on making declarations, just like some legendary magic mirror. Magic mirror in my hand. Who is the fairest on this island? Evil Queen asked as Evie was getting ready that morning. Mom, you're not holding anything in your hand. And anyway, is that really the first thing on your mind? Not breakfast? Asked Evie, who was starving. She perused the day's offerings. Hard croissants and watery coffee from the basket the vultures left on their doorstep every day. Your daughter has grace, but should take better care of her face to be the fairest. Her mother declared in somber tones that she called her a magic mirror voice. Fairest, prettiest, most beautiful. The thickest hair, the fullest lips, the smallest nose. It was all her mother cared about. Evil Queen blamed all her troubles on not being more beautiful than Snow White, and it seemed no matter how well Evie did her hair or put on her makeup, she would never be beautiful enough for her mother. It made Evie sick to her beautiful stomach sometimes. Like mother, like daughter. Or so she'd always been told. The poison apple never fell far from the tree. And even if Evie suspected there might be more to life than being beautiful, that wasn't something she could ever say to her mother. The woman had a one-track mind. You didn't put on enough blush. How will you ever win a handsome prince looking like that? Her mother scolded, pinching her cheeks. If only there was one around here, said Evie, who dutifully took out her compact and reapplied. There were no princes to be found on the island, as all the princes lived in Ordon now. That's where all the world's royalty lived, and that's where she should live too. But it was not to be. Like her mother, she would be trapped on the Isle of the Lost forever. Evie checked the hallway mirror one last time and adjusted her blue cape around her shoulders, embroidered with a crown in the middle. Her poison heart necklace winked red in between the soft blue folds. Her raggedy black skirt with the splashes of red, white, and blue paint went well with her forest print-like black and white leggings. Your hair! Evil Queen said with despair, tucking a loose strand back into her daughter's neat V-braid, which swept her hair off her forehead. Okay. Now you're ready. Thanks, Mom, said Evie, whose only goal was to survive the day. Are you sure it's safe to go to school? No one can keep a grudge for 10 years. Also, we're all out of wrinkle cream. Pick up some from the bazaar. I don't trust the vultures to send the right one. Evie nodded and hoped her mother was right. But when she stepped out of their castle gates, she froze. Maleficent's curse echoed in her ears. But nothing happened. And she kept going. Maybe, for once, the wicked old fairy had forgotten about it. When Evie arrived at school that morning, everyone stared at her as she walked through the halls. She felt a bit self-conscious and wondered if she'd ever fit in. She was supposed to check in with Dr. F, the headmaster, when she arrived. But where were the administrative chambers? Evie wondered, whirling around in a full circle. May I help you? A handsome, if somewhat hairy and very large boy asked when he saw her. Oh, I'm looking for the headmaster?
Follow me, he said with a broad grin. Gaston, at your service. And this is my brother, Gaston.
He pointed to his identical twin, who gave her the same beaming, arrogant smile. Thank you, Gaston's, Evie replied. The boys led her down the hall to the administrative tombs.
Dr. F, you got a visitor, Gaston said, reaching for the door handle. I want to open it, his brother said, elbowing him away.
But the first Gaston punched him without even a backward look.
After you, princess,
he offered grandly, as his brother slithered to the floor, holding his jaw. Thanks, I think, said Evie. Dr. Facilier looked up and gave the three students a jack-o'-lantern smile.
Yes?
Oh, Evie, welcome to Dragon Hall. It's a delight to see you again, child. It's been too long.
10 years, is it? How is your lovely mother?
She's well, thanks. Evie nodded politely but hurried to get to the point. Dr. Facilier, I just wanted to see if I could swap my wickedness class for advanced vanities that meets at the same time, she asked. The shadowy man frowned. Evie batted her eyelashes. It would mean so much to me. By the way, she pointed to his bolo tie with its unfortunate silver chain. That is so cool, she said, thinking exactly the opposite.
Oh, this? I picked it up in the Bayou d'Orleans right before I was brought here,
he sighed, and his frown softened into a real smile.
I suppose vanities is a better fit for your overall schedule. Consider it done. Good. I'm in that class, the Gastons chorused. On Tuesdays, it's right after lunch.
Lunch? Evie slapped her forehead.
What's wrong?
I forgot to bring mine. In all the excitement and anxiety about finally leaving the castle, she'd left her basket at home.
Don't worry, the twins replied. You can share ours, they added, holding up two huge baskets of food.
A giant block of some particularly smelly cheese poked out, along with two loaves of brown bread, speckled with mold, and several thick slices of liverwurst. Evie was touched they had offered to share, even though they looked like they could eat a horse and a half between them, with or without the mold. They led her down the winding hallway. The stone walls were covered in the same pea-green moss as outside, and seemed to be leaking some sort of brown liquid all over the dusty cement floor. Evie felt something furry circling her ankles, and found a fat black cat with a smug grin looking up at her. Hi, kitty, she cooed, leaning down to pet it.
That's Lucifer, said one of the Gastons. Our mascot.
Several yelps from first-year students could be heard from inside the rusty lockers that haphazardly lined the corridor. With only a few light bulbs flickering overhead, Evie nearly walked into a giant cobweb woven over a heavy steel door. A spider the size of a witch's cauldron sat in its center.
Cool.
Where does that lead to? She asked.
Oh, that? That's the door to the Athenaeum of Evil, the other Gaston said.
Come again?
The Library of Forbidden Secrets, he explained. Nobody is allowed down there, and only Dr. F has the key.
What kind of secrets? Asked Evie, intrigued.
Forbidden ones, I guess? Gaston shrugged. Who cares? It's a library. Sounds pretty boring to me.
Finally,